Thanks.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Socrates, Rousseau, Thoreau, Nietzsche, you may have been one of those people who purposely avoided Philosophy 101 in high school or college, but in these extraordinary and challenging times we're facing, there may be no better time than to revisit history's greatest thinkers than right now. Our next guest went on a pilgrimage to places like Athens, Delhi, even Coney Island, traveling by train to follow in the footsteps of some of the greatest philosophers to ever live in his latest book, The Socrates Express, in search of life lessons from dead philosophers. And now he's here to share some of those practical applications and lessons to today's everyday challenges, so you don't have to enroll in Philosophy 101. Eric Weiner is with us. He's a former NPR foreign correspondent and author of the previous bestsellers, The Geography of Bliss. And as I said, his latest book is The Socrates Express, In Search of Life Lessons from Dead Philosophers. Eric, thanks for being here today.
Happy to be with you, Brian.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. As ever, the lines are open at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Have you found ancient wisdom that's applicable to your daily life? Are you falling back on any particular philosopher's thinking in these tough times? Maybe you just have a question for Eric Weiner or his latest book. Give us a call, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. Eric, I want to begin by taking the Socrates Express stop by stop, so to speak, right? But first, in the introduction, the first thing you write about is the difference between information, knowledge, and wisdom. Can you talk about that? Why should we be seeking wisdom?
Right, because I think we often confuse those three, and we live in an information age, and we tend to think that if we have a problem, it can be solved by greater information or knowledge. And really, I don't think that's true. With our current situation with the pandemic, it's not really a lack of information and knowledge that's preventing us from getting over the hump, but a lack of wisdom. So information is really a jumble of data bytes, if you will. Knowledge is a more organized jumble, but wisdom is what you do with it, right? It's been said that knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad.
I want to ask why in particular ancient wisdom, right? I mean, you look at the self-help section of the bookstore, there's new titles every month. What is the advantage of going back to, millennia in some cases to find wisdom?
Well, because we don't want to go back to the ancient Greeks for, say, pharmacology, right? That we've made great advances. but when it comes to wisdom, we're really much closer to the ancients than we think. I mean, they exalted and suffered and had headaches for all the same reasons that we do. And as I like to say, knowledge has an expiration date, but wisdom doesn't. Wisdom is portable. It transcends space and time. And I should add that a lot of these ancient philosophers and not so ancient ones lived through pandemics really much worse than ours. I mean, they've been there, whether it was Socrates in Athens or Montaigne in southern France during the Black Death. So we'd be silly not to listen to them.
Yeah, and if I could just be self-indulgent for a moment and share my own story, there was a number of years ago I was introduced to Seneca and his Letters from a Stoic. And I was struck, I was writing a newspaper column at the time, and there was like good advice for the information age, right? He had this one line about, while everyone around me was hurrying thus from all directions to the waterfront, I found a great deal of pleasure in refusing to bestir myself. This was basically right. Mail call, right? And he's sort of bragging that he turned off notifications on his phone, the first
right.
century
and
version
the waterfront
of that.
Is the internet, basically, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting that you mentioned Seneca, who is a Stoic, because I think Stoicism is, in particular, one of the ancient philosophies that's particularly helpful during times like these. Stoicism is really a philosophy for tough times, because what it teaches us is that we cannot control events. They are outside of our control. but what we can control is our reaction to them. And that may seem obvious, but we don't often live that way. We act like there's only one possible reaction to a crisis, and that is, you know, to pull our hair out and to drink too much and all those things. And the Stoics say, wait a second. It's actually up to you how you respond emotionally inside to these events.
Kind of cut through those early stages of grief to mix our advice here and get to the to figuring out how you will accept it. We need to take a break here in a moment, and there's a lot more to talk about. We're going to continue the conversation for the rest of the show. We're speaking with Eric Weiner, who is an author. He traveled by train, revisiting some of the old haunts of some of the greatest philosophers to ever live in his latest book. It's called The Socrates Express, In Search of Life Lessons from Dead Philosophers. Listeners, if you have questions for Eric, please give us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. More to come with our conversation with Eric Weiner after a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Eric Weiner. He's the author of The Socrates Express, In Search of Life Lessons from Dead Philosophers. Listeners, you're welcome to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. If you have a question for Eric, or maybe you want to talk about some ancient wisdom you have found helpful in this most extraordinary year we're living through, 800-222-9455. Eric, I want to talk about the structure of your book, right? It's based on train travel to these places where these philosophers spent a lot of time in their lives, places of significance for them if they didn't live there. Athens for Socrates, Delhi for Gandhi, et cetera. Why do you like to travel by train? Why is that important?
I feel that I can think on a train, and I can't think on an airplane, no matter what class of service. At 30,000 feet, maybe it's a thin air, maybe, I don't know what it is. And I can't think on a bus either, but I can think on a train. And I'm not alone in this regard. Many great ideas have been birthed on trains, including Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling was on a delayed British rail train when she dreamed up the idea of the boy wizard. So there's something about train travel that lends itself to contemplation. For the obvious thing is that it's slower, that you've slowed down. And a lot of philosophy, the kind of practical philosophy I'm speaking of, the first step is really to slow down, to pause, and to take your time. And we're so busy rushing around trying to answer questions, solve problems. We don't sit and experience really profound questions about, you know, what it means to lead a good life, to be a good person, or just to be happy. You know, we don't often stop and pause. And on a train, you're moving slowly and you have time to think.
Okay, well, let's take a couple of stops on your train journey here. Sure. The first, it begins with mornings, how to get out of bed, like Marcus Aurelius. I think many of us could use advice on this some days. You know, what can you or Marcus Aurelius,
right.
I guess.
Right, so Marcus Aurelius was a Roman emperor, right? Like extremely powerful man who ruled over like a quarter of the planet's population at the time, and he was a Stoic. And yet he had trouble getting out of bed. And when I heard about this, I thought, well, here's someone I can relate to, because I also have trouble getting out of bed. And so in his thin little book called Meditations, which I highly recommend, he writes about lots of subjects, but he writes about this wrestling with this notion of, you know, it's so warm under the covers and it's so bad out there. Why should I get out of bed? And ultimately, he decides it's his sense of duty. And not as a Roman or as a philosopher, but as a human being to help others. That's why he gets out of bed. And I think that's what gets a lot of us out of bed. It's not to find pleasure or to achieve our goals. It's, you know, because the kids need to be have breakfast, or the dog needs to be fed, or whatever it is. It's other sentient beings, and that's sort of the takeaway from that chapter.
You know, and I want to sort of, you know, the pandemic has presented so many challenges to us, and so I want to, you know, kind of jump through a few of the other stops on your train, not necessarily in a rush, but pick a few philosophers that you write about, and you know what you think we can learn. You know, given in our current context from what they had to say. So let's start with Thoreau. How can we see or maybe shift our perspective like Thoreau?
Right. So Thoreau is, you know, best known for his experiment in isolation at Walden Pond. He really wasn't so isolated, but that's another story. But really, I think what he's about is seeing, about seeing more everyday beauty. And Thoreau would, you know, he would change his perspective. He would look at, say, Walden Pond up in Concord, Massachusetts, you know, from a hilltop, and then he'd look at it from a rowboat on the surface. He'd dive underwater. He'd even peer between his legs, sort of bend over and look at the pond upside down. And the point of all this was really to notice the everyday beauty that we often miss. I mean, as Thoreau says in his journals, you know, with the right mindset, every drop in a rainstorm is a rainbow. And we tend to rush through life and not see the beauty that's right before us, before our very eyes. And that's one of the great lessons of Thoreau, is slowing down, yes, but also, you know, changing your perspective, looking at what's before you every day from 10 or 20 degrees off center and seeing something today that you didn't see yesterday.
And part of this journey for you is on foot, right? I mean, train slows you down from an airplane, and walking slows you down from a train. And, right. And whether you're following Gandhi, and I want to come back to Gandhi in a minute, but Gandhi or Rousseau, how does one's environment, you know, how does walking through an environment affect the way you see it?
Well, walking is really conducive to philosophy and thinking. And whether it was Thoreau in Concord or Rousseau in Europe, in France at the time, in Switzerland, a lot of these thinkers were great walkers, and that's not a coincidence. There's something about the act of walking that is both, it's contemplative and it's active at the same time. You're sort of in motion and at rest at the same time. And there's something about that combination, like train travel, that lends itself to thinking. And Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the Swiss philosopher in the 18th century, would walk 20 miles a day, think nothing of it. And he carried a deck of playing cards with him, and when an idea came to him, he would jot them down on the playing cards. I mean, many listeners may have experienced this themselves. They're stuck with some problem in their life or at work, and then they go for a nice long walk, and all of a sudden the solution appears. And I should add that walking is one thing that we can still do today, socially distanced and outdoors, and I think it's very therapeutic, especially now.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Eric Weiner, whose latest book is The Socrates Express. Listeners, the phone lines are open at 800-222-9455. Mike in Champaign, welcome to the 21st. What's your question for Eric?
Hi there. Great book. I haven't read, but the title in your conversation has encouraged me to do that. I'm wondering if you included folks who might be dismissed in some way as humorists rather than just philosophers, like Will Rogers and Mark Twain, who I think hold a wealth of wisdom for us. I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you very much for the program.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Mike. So, Eric, do the noted philosophers, Rogers or Twain?
No Will Rogers or Mark Twain, but the caller makes an interesting point about humor. There is this connection between philosophy and humor. You know, I think it was William James who said that, you know, humor is common sense dancing. And I think there's something to that. And Steve Martin, the comedian, not many people know this, but he majored in philosophy as an undergrad. And he famously said, if you major in any other subject, you forget it all the moment you graduate, but if you major in philosophy, you retain just enough to mess you up for the rest of your life, which is sadly the impression many people have of philosophy. They don't often think of it as practical or fun, but as I discovered, it's both of those things.
How did you pick which philosophers you were going to include.
Well, I picked the ones, Brian, that spoke to me, the ones who were red-blooded, fully animated human beings in all the good and bad ways. I mean, these were flawed individuals. Rousseau had this strange habit of exposing his backside in public to strangers. And don't get me started on Nietzsche. And he was a strange dude. They were all, these men and women, were all odd in different ways and flawed, but they were heroic. I mean, they really wrestled with life's big ideas. And I also, you know, I wanted a smattering of, I would say, a representation from the ages, from ancient Athens, you know, Socrates in 5th century BC, all the way up to Simone de Beauvoir in 20th century Paris, and Western and non-Western thinkers like Gandhi and Confucius. The West has no monopoly on wisdom, that's for sure.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Gandhi, because you lived, as I understand it, in India for years as an NPR correspondent. One of the chapters in your book is How to Fight Like Gandhi. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of protests in the United States now against police brutality, for racial justice. Do you see lessons in Satyagraha for what's happening today?
Absolutely. Satyagraha means literally soul force, and the term was invented by Gandhi to define what he saw as a very courageous form of resistance, which is nonviolent resistance. And the big misunderstanding about Gandhi is that he was a pacifist. He wasn't. He hated the term. He hated anything that reeked of pacifism. He was very active. He would get into the face of his opponent, but completely nonviolently. John Lewis's term about getting into good trouble, necessary trouble, that's pure Gandhian, and it's not a coincidence. John Lewis studied Gandhi, traveled to India, as did Martin Luther King Jr. And Gandhi was a stickler for discipline among the ranks of his satyagrahis, the nonviolent resistors. And he would shut down a protest if there was even an inkling of violence among, you know, could be thousands and thousands of protesters, even an inkling of violence, he would shut it down, I think, for two reasons. One was the moral reason. He thought that you had to essentially rise above the people you were and try to convert the people you were protesting against. And so the moral imperative was to do that nonviolently. But also strategically, he knew, as we're seeing today in the news, that if there's a little bit of violence in an otherwise nonviolent protest, that becomes the news and that takes away from your message.
You know, and as we think about these protests, we've been hearing a lot about empathy and this idea of, you know, understanding what our fellow Americans are going through. This is obviously a tense and divided time politically. We're coming up on an election with a lot of consequences. And I wonder, another stop on your train, another chapter in your book is being kind like Confucius. Are there lessons there for Americans in 2020?
Yes, there is. Confucius thought that he didn't invent kindness, of course, but he was the first philosopher to talk about kindness as sort of a governing strategy. He lived during a very violent time of the warring states in China, and he thought that a good ruler used kindness, and that was more effective at keeping control, actually, over a population and maintaining your authority as a governing person. And on a more practical, everyday level, he thought that we need essentially kindness rituals. Confucius was big on ritual, and he thought that ritual is basically the container that holds our kindness. And, you know, this is why there's a greeting card section in stores, and we don't have to write them ourselves, that there's the ritual of sending the card and a place to go to get them. And we sort of, I think, kind societies have lots of these containers, if you know what I mean. They have lots of ways of expressing kindness. The Japanese are famously polite, which may or may not overlap with kindness, but there are lots of rituals to dip into. And it's during times of crisis like now, and you want to be kind and you don't know what to do, that it's nice to have these sort of preset rituals to turn to.
And when you talk about greeting card sections in stores, I think of, you know, that so much of our political conversations these days happens on social media, and maybe that lacks the sort of place, you know, the modes of kindness that we have developed in other realms.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right that there's something about social media that, for the most part, not completely, but for the most part, tends to bring out the worst in people, not our better angels. And I don't know, a lot of the philosophers I encountered in my journey sort of warned against social media hundreds and sometimes thousands of years before it, like Seneca, as you said, but also Schopenhauer, a German philosopher, who warned against turning to books for answers, the Google of his day, and he warned against overreading. He was concerned that we're so busy absorbing the ideas of others that we can't hear our own still small voice. And I think that happens on social media. I think so much is coming at us that we don't have time to sit with our own thoughts and ideas. And maybe that's where some of the, well, nastiness, to be honest, of social media, why that may explain some of it.
Well, listeners, that is all the time we have. I would recommend you take some time to sit not only with your own thoughts, but the Socrates Express in Search of Life Lessons from Dead Philosophers. It's written by Eric Weiner. Eric, thanks so much for being with us today on the
21st. Thanks, Brian. Great philosophical chat.
Listeners, before we go, I do want to mention tomorrow on the 21st, we're planning to bring you a pandemic voting Q&A with some top election officials in Illinois. If you have questions about how to vote, where you can vote, mail-in ballots, anything else regarding this fall's elections, we want to hear from you. Call us during the show, email talk@21stshow.org. Better yet, send us a voice memo using the app on your phone. Email it again to talk@21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.